You're listening to Big Mouth Black Girl Podcast. And I'm your girl Kay. That's K-A-Y from Counter Blessings K. And I have a great author by the name of Dame Soletic who wrote Lyric Painted Polaroids, Volume 1, One Soul's Digest with me today.
Hey y'all.
I'm so excited. Y'all don't know. I'm really, really excited. Like, I'm really hyped right now. And it's not because I'm sipping and sippening. Remember when I said that last podcast, y'all? Sippening. I'm sipping on some wine right now, so I'm feeling kind of good. And also, this poetry has got me feeling some type of way and in my feelings in the good way. So, oh my goodness, Dame Soletic, tell me. Okay, you got to let the people know who you are and what you do and let's get into it, girl.
All right, like, so I'm just a round-the-way girl. Dame Soletic Luther, you know, I just so happen to write a couple of books and stuff, you know. just a regular chick that really just found the courage to tell her story. That's pretty much it. Lyric Painted Polaroids, Volume 1, One Soul's Digest is just the journey through my 20s. I just turned 30 on August 13th, so, and my 20s were bananas. So, I decided to talk about it because I feel like, as women, like, our mistakes or the things that we do to try and find ourselves, we don't talk about it enough. Mm. So it's really what the book is about, my journey of trying to find myself and figure out what direction I was going in. And the different people that I came across, the different men that I came across, the different men that I laid with, the different experiences that I had. So, yeah, the book is just my soul on paper.
Wow. Yes. And I think, of course, that's why you called it One Soul's Digest. And it's basically, it's beautiful. I like the title Lyric Painted Polaroids because If you haven't read this amazing book of poetry, just it oozes just snapshots of a part of someone's life, like their perspectives, their experiences, and very similar to like my field of anthropology of studying human beings, they always stated in intro anthropology that studying a person or a society, you're only taking a snapshot of that person, right? And so years down the line, things change, culture changes, that person changes, right? And so they're not going to be the same exact person. And I really dig the title. I dig the poems. I mean, some of the poems had me hot, y'all. They had me hot. I was at work one time reading one of the poems and I was just like, hold on, I need a glass of water, y'all. It's really, really, really like quench your thirst, okay? But in a sapiosexual way, it's not like, you know, very sexually alluded. Although I am okay with all types of artistry, I do like the way that you kind of make a spinoff and a playoff on a lot of your poetry to make people think and make people feel and not just in a sexual innuendo way, you know?
Right. Thank you.
So I'm excited and I really want to talk about some of the things that kind of bothers me. In the last episode of Black KKK in Hollywood, I kind of touched on a lot of children in our society. They don't write anymore. They don't want to do poetry. They don't want to read period. Like they feel like, what's a book? Like, why should I even pick up a book? And I explained in the last episode that, you know, Maya Angelou, rest in peace, she explained how saddened she was and she felt like people were going to look at poetry as kind of like this anomaly or something that is, you know, historic or, you know, something that's kind of like cavemanish, like old school and not interesting and kind of in the past. And I don't want poetry. I don't want books and the power of writing to be forgotten. And you remember when Kendrick Lamar stated Johnny said books ain't cool no more in his song XXX?
Right.
Yeah.
That
really impacted me. Like the whole, I'm not gonna lie, damn, the whole album just gave me all type of bomb.
Right.
I was like, it gave me some type of black power tease. How did you feel about that album?
And the album was amazing. I feel like it just hit the nail on the head, you know. people always say that artists always go along with what's going on in the culture, and I can definitely say that Kendrick Lamar has always done that. I love his music, and his artistry is amazing, the way that he, you know, attacks issues, social issues, and community issues with such intelligence. And, you know, most rappers, of course, they like to rap about, you know, trapping and hood stuff, but he's really using his platform to make change, and I think it's beautiful.
Definitely. Definitely. And every, like, you can listen to the song, like, his whole album from the beginning to the end, and I've been a Kendrick Lamar fan since he first came out, you know what I'm saying? When he when he came out with he came out with High Power, you know, and even before High Power, and I love Kush and Corinthians, and I just love Kendrick because he takes hip-hop to a different stratosphere that isn't always about big booty hoes and stripping. I mean, he even talked about how he wants to see those stretch marks. He wants to see the imperfections of Black women and not just plastered faces. And you could even think that the way that we as our society has turned makeup industry into more so like plastering faces, almost like you're wearing a face. Someone could even reach out and say, like, blackface almost. Like, you're putting on this big facade to try to do what? To allure attraction. And a lot of men are stating that they're really not into all that makeup. And so it questions women's ability to look past their own flaws and see it as more beauty. And that's something that I see as a parallel in your work of art and your poetry. It's just beautiful.
Well, thank you.
So...
Thank you.
Yeah, and my biggest fear is making sure that we encourage, you know, we as adults encourage our children to be creative and to be able, especially children of color, because it's very rough out here. You know, it's hard out here for people. You know, it's hard out here to be like Black in this world of like white America. And for us to utilize our frustrations and our frustrations with the glass ceiling, right? Our frustrations with not being understood or being placated as like a bad person or angry Black person or angry Black woman or angry Black man or whatever, and kind of being put into that typecasted role in Hollywood, in society in general, it makes you kind of like, you know, it forces you to utilize poetry and art as a way to like, you use your anger in a therapeutic way. And so let's talk about the power of that and let's get into it, right, love?
Yeah, I mean, you're completely right, because like you were talking about Kendrick Lamar, there's
his bar, yeah, his bar, he had a bar,
There's one segment in his song that you were talking about with Johnny said, "Books ain't cool no more," and he says, "Hail Mary and Joseph, the great American flag, is wrapped in a do-rag with wrapped and dragged with explosives, compulsive disorders, sons and daughters, barricade blocks and borders, look at what you taught us. It's murder on my street, your street, Black streets, Wall Street, corporate offices, banks, employees, bosses, homicidal thoughts, Donald Trump's in office and we lost Barack. You promised to never doubt him again, but Americans honest, do we bask in sin?
Wow.
Bask again, I mix it with American blood, then bash him in. You crippin' or you married to a blood. I'll ask again, oops, accident." Like.
Bars. 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 Like,
he hits so many things on the head about what's going on in today's society. The things like that song, This Is America, how all this stuff was happening in the video, and it's how people just are so interested in what's now that they placate themselves.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And you know, although I have like my perspectives of This Is America and Childish Gambino in general, just because I don't really see him on the same light as Kendrick as far as like lyricism and as far as him explaining himself for the purpose. Like, I genuinely think Kendrick Lamar is doing it for the people and for the culture. Childish Gambino, I do question it. I question it a lot because
the video made the song.
I think the video, I think the video, you know, I don't know. I don't know how I feel. Like, I don't know how I feel. Like, I'm lost because I'm not really understanding the perspective of the video, but I just, I couldn't jive with it, y'all. Like, I was just, I talked about that in a previous episode, and I'm just like, because Childish Gambino, he kind of reminds me, and I hate to say this, I made a reference to him as like, almost like Kanye and Mos Def. Like, he's very creative and very like inspirational through hip hop, like Mos Def, right? And very on a conscious level. But then he has a little bit of narcissism on a like Kanye level. When I was watching him on a lot of his interviews with individuals and he was talking, and the narcissism that oohed from him, it made me feel some type of way about like, what is your goal on like exposing Black people and like their plight in such a, you know, in such a big platform and utilizing that? Like, are you doing it to make money or are you doing it to make change? And I kind of confused.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Does the artist's motives change the art?
Well, then we have a question. Like, you know, that is a good, you know, you got me there, because I feel like I don't know. And that's a great question, because especially when you're getting into like Chris Brown and R. Kelly, and like, does the artist themselves, do you paint the art off of the artist? Like, does it change like how dope it is or how amazing or how creative or innovative it is because of the person's flaws? Or could we accept the art and not the person? That's a great question.
I'll say this. Most artists, like, have you ever heard that saying, the artist is the child that is the child that survived?
Huh.
Like, their past. So most of the time, I was just writing on Twitter not too long ago about how a lot of people don't realize that a lot of beautiful things are birthed from pain. And the experience that we had in order to create as an artist came from something that hurt, and you see it as beautiful. And it touches you and it excites you. Like my book. A lot of the things that I talk about in my book were just like gut-wrenching. And they're horrible experiences. But it resonates because other people have experienced those things too. But at the same time, the beauty was birthed from pain, and that doesn't change. The blood, the sweat, the tears, and all of the hurt. Like, one of my favorite artists, The Weeknd. When he first came out, he was addicted to drugs. He was depressed. But his music and his artistry, the darkness that came from it, I resonated with it. One, because you don't hear a lot of artists talk about what they're actually experiencing. And two, I love the fact that he told his truth.
Yeah, exactly.
He's the only artist that I know that don't cry on stage when he's singing something complicated or difficult that's not a female.
Exactly. And I feel like him getting into that pain and like exposing that pain in such a like transformational and transparent way, it allowed, in my opinion, a lot of males to not feel so like bombarded by, oh no, well, you know, if I get all emotional and I'm a Black male, then people are going to put me in the typecast of Drake in the negative way, you know? And they felt like, wow, I can identify with being emotional in a very creative way and not being chastised and like, you know, emasculated. So I feel you, girl.
Right.
Yeah. Most definitely. So
just a thought.
Right. So now you guys got a little bit of flavor. Dame Soletic is going to be quoting some poetry for us. I'm so excited to hear her in the live quote her pieces. She's so amazing. But before we get into that, they got to know our history, right?
A little bit.
Because we go way back. So listen up, because it's going to be fire. Please be advised that Big Mouth Black Girl Podcast does contain some profanity. We also discuss some controversial topics pertaining to race, ethnicity, religion, politics, we talk about it all, as well as the intersectionality between Black communities and other racial communities, and we hold nothing back. So if you don't like to listen to the real, or you don't want to hear something that can educate you, uplift you, and possibly expand your mind, just like the allegory of the cave, you can just go back into that dark cave and just pretend like you didn't hear anything. But without further ado, I give to you Big Mouth Black Girl Podcast. Walk it in my pocket. I gotta walk it in my pocket. Walk it in my pocket. I gotta walk it in my pocket. Girl, that was the most hilarious video that I've ever seen. But then it also became very scary. Remember that walking in my pocket video?
Right. I do remember it. And it was simultaneously hilarious and terrifying. Like, I'm all down with, you know, having a good laugh, but the reality of it when you're done laughing is the fact that people, like, really, like, kids really, really, really need, unfortunately, a lot of children need that kind of stuff in order to connect. They need a spoon. They need a catchy cadence. They need some background noise, some boom, you know, like, it's terrifying that's where we have come to. Like, I remember when I was a kid, like, immersing myself inside of a story, that was a treat. That was exciting. That was something that I looked forward to. Like, I might have been a nerd. Like, I was definitely the kid who would walk with a book up to my face. I was definitely that kid. But I feel like there was a certain deal, and there was a certain things cold within a story that you could never get on TV.
And it's the fact that imagination, that imagination.
Right. It's in your imagination. Absolutely.
Wow. And I think we've kind of lost touch of that. We've lost the intimate connection between, like, poetry or a story. And, you know, poetry is in each stanza and each bar, if you want to even argue that poetry is hip hop and hip hop is poetry. Within each bar, each stanza, within each line, there's a story that's encapsulated. And for individuals to lose sight of being more intimate with a story, it really shows how quick people want to just throw something out there, catch it really quick. And you have to do, like, so much, like, the brrr, yeah, yeah, like, in the background, just to keep people interested, or even children interested. That's really scary.
Really scary. It's terrifying. Like, the fact that people can't connect mere words. We speak words every day. Every day. And if you can't connect with simple language, how do you communicate?
That's what kind of, like, as an anthropology major coming back from that background again, that's what distinguishes us from all other animals, is our ability to linguistically, like, the way that we were anatomically created to linguistically, like, speak and connect with one another on a language level. And then our ability to empathetically feel, utilizing words to evoke emotions, you know?
Right.
And so I feel... kind of like at first, like you said, I was laughing. I was like, oh my God, that was hilarious. And then I was like, oh shoot, especially with the cadence of walk it like a talking, walk it like a talking,
right,
walk it in my pocket, walk it in my pocket. Like, when you think of that cadence, it's so, like, hardcore, it's so, like, forced. And it's not like there isn't any type of, like, sentence pace or something that has more of an ambiguity or leaves kind of room for a person to feel and think. It's just very, like, forced into someone. And it's almost like a part of a conditioning, in my opinion. I don't know if I'm going for a reach, but, you know, when I took a voodoo's class, yes, I took a voodoo's class, a voodoo and hoodoo's class, I learned the importance of music and how it causes people to not only feel, but it can also train somebody to think a certain way, right? Because when you say something constantly over and over and over again in a certain way, in a certain cadence, it kind of programs your brain to think that way. And so a lot of hoodoo and voodoo people, they utilize sometimes music in order to create kind of like a transit space or perspective, or even to get closer to like a realm of spirituality or whatever they're trying to accomplish with like a type of spell or whatnot. And so taking this hoodoo and voodoo's class was just like, oh my gosh, this is like really crazy. And for me to hear the cadence of walking in my pocket, it really showed me like there's no room for thought, no room for empathy, no room for intimacy. It's just that stanza is like hit, and that's it.
Right. It doesn't even give you time to embrace the words. Dive right back into the next. We're coming for you.
Like, right.
I hear certain songs, and it used to be like, you know, like Karen Sade, Kim, and you know, like Raheem. Like you listen to this stuff. And there, because of the way the song was set up, it was like a beginning and an end. And it was written so that there was a climax, and then you would come back down into rest. Nowadays, music, it's like so stressful to listen to because there's no beginning, middle, and end. It's just like, if I'm following the little story that they might have, then I'll get it. But if I can't understand the words, I just hear, whoa.
And it brings me to the perspective that I feel like hip hop has obviously transitioned into this like really dark level of almost like, I hate to do this reach, but I want to go for it because I feel that way, especially with it being relevant into today's society, with like hip hop turning into like almost like metal. Like a dark metal, and like, you know, and metal and heavy metal and like rock, there's like the different levels to rock. You have like your rock, you have alternative rock, you have soft rock, then you have like death Metallica metal rock. I feel like hip-hop has reached our death metal stage, where it's just really hardcore, it's harsh, it's misogynistic, it's very materialistic, and there isn't really a heart to it. It's just, I want to do what I want, and I don't care how I affect people. I don't even want people to think. And that's how I feel hip-hop has transitioned, and it's really scary, it's really sad. But
I mean, the fact that like I feel like I was watching this little thing on, I don't know, it was on YouTube, but it was like 20 minutes long or something, and the whole video talked about how certain sounds, uh-huh, like certain vibrations provoke certain thoughts or feelings.
Wow.
I really feel like a lot of music taps into that.
Huh.
It produces certain colors, certain, all of that. Like, the way that it affects your brain, I don't feel as if these songs and these cadences and the musical manipulation is by accident at all.
Of course not, because you got to also question, like, who is the person that is pushing this agenda for this music? I mean, obviously, you can't say, we want to hear this, because if that was the case, I feel like we would hear a different type of music in the industry. I think this is what is being forced on us by, like, the big stakeholders, the people who own the music industries, like the head people, not just the executives, like the individuals who are actually putting money into this, the individuals who are making the actual moves behind the scenes, like, you know, not Alice in the Wonderland. What's the one with Dorothy? The Dorothy or whatever? The Yellow Brick Road?
Oh, that's
Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, back with the Wizard of Oz, you had like the man behind the machine, the man behind the mask, who is like literally the person who is supposed to be infiltrating and doing everything behind the scenes. And I feel like that person in the industry doesn't have a title. And I feel like a lot of people want to say conspiracy, but you've got to see, like, what is the whole agenda? And if me thinking from a very superior type of perspective, if I'm afraid of people thinking, of people connecting, then I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that that's not being done. You feel me?
Absolutely.
So Yeah, but I am a person and you're a person that likes to think and likes to feel, even if it's great stuff, shameful stuff, stuff we not necessarily regret, because they're not regrets, they're lessons, right?
They're journeys.
Journeys. I've taken many journeys, girl. I know you have too. And I loved learning about your journeys through your works and reading your poetry and feeling your journey, not just reading it, but feeling it. And so let's get into it.
All right. Okay, so I'm going to be reading Murder, He Wrote. You can find it in Last Painted Polaroids, Volume 1, One Soul's Digest. I desire, need, less for. I want to taste the words that leave your lips. Kiss this man's intelligence. I hunger after this man's intellect, and I am drawn to your other mind like a pyro to a flame. It's volatile. Is it possible to desire that which is in you? To covet your thoughts, intimately yearning, craving for your psyche? Need the expression of your emotions to enter my bosom with such force, such power that is malignant, that I feel you. I mean, truly feel you. Come. Unicate. In a brilliant way of oral, intellectual demonstration, but it's not you. Somehow I've fallen for your life's philosophy, the notions that drive you, but not you. The theories, deliberation, and skepticism that hide and rest deep in you, marinated in so much passion that chills run down my spine as your Lexus is fervently manifested, and yet here I stand in needing what? Lost in ambiguous transparency with this me, my belly, my bosom loaded with my oblivion. So many times of countless never-ending cycles of yes, I need you right now, please hold me just for tonight. Let me taste you. I want to be the prerequisite of your beauty found in the crack of dawn and your tomorrow or maybe, or your tonight. Maybe. We will see, he's thinking. No, not tonight, my little nightfall sweetheart. The queen of my stories of obscurity, the candy kiss secrets, the face of my sexual indiscretions, he denotes, that he'll contemplate on his alliance with the brethren, and only when and if stress becomes too much of a burden, he says, can I count on you? He discloses, if he needs me, if he needs that essence that drives him away from his domesticated existence, that caress that invokes his fundamental nature to coil and shudder, that stroke that teases his sanity out of reach, he says, can I count on you? Can he count on me to make his face flourish with rhapsody, to touch him as if he was my devotion? Brother, please tell me, why these stipulations in your heart and no love this time, yet in the midst of this limbo, somehow I remain stuck. Trapped between this fire that I lit in my own bosom and surrounded by the walls closing, here I am. Yes, here I stand, this junkie mystified by my own hunger, attempting to overcome the aspirations of my next fix, which is accentuated in my soul. This thirst is in my blood. It's mental anguish, forcing me to swallow my feelings, preventing the truth from showing, fixed between the truth of this man and the one that I read on paper, the one that lay here, face to face, here beside me, this beautiful demon with a profile of frank reality breathing next to me. So angelic in the scriptures that he creates as secondary entertainment. Where is this man, this king of your poetry, this Christ-loving, fervent scholar of whom I know you could be? I wonder, can you tell me, where is he, or does he even exist?
Woo! That fire! That fire!
Oh my God. Thank you.
It just, like, y'all, I don't know if you went on a journey, okay? But I'm gonna need you to cop this book one time, okay? I need you to cop this book.
Yes.
Lyric Painted Polaroids, Volume 1. One Soul's Digest. This is so amazing. Like I said, y'all, I bought the book when Dame Soletic first came out, and she was like, I'm coming out with my poetry book. Pick up my piece, check it out. I got it, and I was like, look, I want you to sign it. I want to read it. But I don't think they know where we've come from. I feel like we forgot to touch base on this, but I've known Dame Soletic by her actual government name, and we've met through, like, church. Remember? We grew up in the church together.
Yep. And for those of y'all that are wondering, to me, y'all. But, yeah, I mean, yo, like, we were little skinny boppers.
We were skinny boppers. We had the little, like, I don't even think I had mosquito bites back then. I might have had mosquito bites because I started developing a lot slower, and then all of a sudden it was just like boom, like junior or senior year I just grew boobs. But I remember, like, me talking with Dame Soletic. I also call her T on a personal tip, right? And I remember, like, we grew up in the church together. We went to the same, like, children's church, and then we went to like Cool Church, that's what it was called, and it was more for, like, preteens and teens.
So true. I mean, look how far we've come.
Oh, my gosh. I feel like when I was reading, because I remember, T, when me and you were friends, we were close, and then something happened and we weren't as close. I don't know if time got in between, or because my mom and my dad were both divorced, and so I was spending some time with my dad and some time with my mom, so it was an off and on thing, so I really couldn't keep relationships in the church too strong because I wasn't really there to stay often long enough. But I do remember touching base with you and getting close with you and, like, you sharing a part of your heart. So, wow. That was fire, okay? It was fire. So, tell me, like, what inspired you to write that piece? And, like, where did you pull from inspiration? And just tell me where did that come from? Because my heart was just in it. I personally was in a relationship with a poet in the past. And I'm not going to say his name on here because I'm not going to call him out like that. But I was in a relationship with a really well-known poet. And things didn't go well for whatever reason. I still have love for him. But it just brought me back and it just triggered those feelings. And I was just like, girl.
Yo, okay, so I was in college and I was digging this guy, you know? And we hung out, we would do stuff together, but he was also in the arts. And the more that I got to know him, the more that I realized that what he wrote about had nothing to do with him. I realized that I was enthralled and infatuated with his writing and not himself. And because, I mean, you know, you have, because, okay, let's look at it like this. Because of the way that I write off my life experiences, I thought that everyone did that. I didn't know people were lying when they write.
I know, it's like, how do you profile and stunt through writing, which is, like, the most intimate thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, how can you fake the funk with that, you know?
Yo, I had never seen it before, so I was just taken aback, and I really just I just wrote about him and how I saw him. I mean, he's a beautiful individual, as far as, like, his mind, like, his mind was so amazing. The conversations we would have were so amazing. I loved talking to him, but his words never matched his lifestyle.
Wow.
His words never matched who he actually was. Because, you know, action means more than words. So when it came down to actually contributing the weight to what it was that he said, it was empty.
Wow.
I was just really, really upset. I was upset with the fact that he was not like, dadgummit, boy, why?
He's like, I have been, like, somebody played a trick on me. This is just straight up, like, trickery. You know what I'm saying? Like, where's the silly rabbit? Tricks are for kids. I'm gonna need somebody to tell me I've been punked, because the person I thought I knew is not who I know. And
right.
Wow. Right.
So, and then it got so deep as the fact that, like, who I knew in private was not who I saw in public. And
wow.
And I mean, I was young. I was only, like, 19, not to put a date on it, but I was young, you know what I mean, when I first wrote this poem. So it was just, like, and when I had that experience, it was just, it really, you know, with me being fresh to the whole dating and really trying to get my footing together and understand who I am, seeing people who don't know who they are and are okay with lying to everyone about who they really are, or really lying in private and telling the truth in public. Who knows what the truth is, you know? But
you're like, thought. Who are you? What are you? You know what I'm saying? Do you know who you are?
Right. That's why I said this demon with a profile of Frank Reality, I had no clue who he was. All I know is he was messing my mind up and I had to get away. I guess. So, I didn't know what it was. Like, I had no idea what to take him as or how to even deal with it. So I just kind of separated myself. And, like, I wrote this poem because I didn't know how else to express myself and how I was feeling. Because you can't just say, you're a liar in public. You're a liar in private. You can't do that.
But, I mean, it kind of, like, I've been through the same thing where I've had, like, just not even just relationship experience, but, like, exposure to people that are great poets, you know, and I've got a chance to know them on a more personal level. And it, like, it kind of makes you, at first you love their art, you love their artistry, you love what they do. And then once you get a chance to know them, you're like, damn, like, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know if I want to listen to it because I don't know if you're a fraud, like, you know.
We all have our own private versions and our own closets, you know, our own secret things and our own things that we don't want anybody to know about, and things that you could consider fraudulent that you keep hidden. We all have our stuff, but your whole person, your whole self, come on, bro. Yeah. That's where that poem came from, and I actually read it to the individual.
Oh my gosh, the tea. I'm sipping. Let me take my wine out and let me sip my tea. Okay, tell me.
Yeah. They were just looking at me like, are you kidding me right now? And it was so beautiful because I'm straight up calling you out in public on your lies, and no one knows who I'm talking about but you.
Oh man, that is...
It was wonderful. And I mean, because the fact is, that's kind of vengeful, but back then I was like, oh, I'm going to get you. Right?
You know, I think that was really sweet and very classy. I mean, you could be like some people, you know, and throw them out under the bus and be like, hey, this person did this and that. Or you could spread things about them or in an artistic way without putting them on blast. They knew who, right. They know who they are. And that's so, like, that's dope. I think that's the best way to go about the situation. Oh my gosh.
Man.
Oh, man. So I can't wait to get into more. Yeah, feed my soul, because I need some souls digest right now. Let's get into it. Poem number 2. I'm so excited. So yeah, I really digged when you started Project Open Box, because to be honest, like, when I was going through my situation of being a homeless mother and you came out with Project Open Box around the same time, it really impacted me in so many ways. I think I even emailed you and reached out to you, and we haven't spoken so many years because of, like, life, and sometimes things happen, right? And it was just, it was beautiful to see that, because we lost, like, a person in our church. And because of the way that person had passed away, it really made me think about how truly wonderful life is and how we have to fight through the bad times to get to the good times. And you really showed me that through Project Open Box.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that, man. Like, for those of you who don't know, Project Open Box was something that I started. It was lives and videos that I started creating in order to combat depression. I feel like depression is combated through truth, and a lot of times we hide our true selves to create this box that it's pretty, but all the trash inside needs to be let out so that other people can see it and you can work through it. Otherwise, you know, that darkness and secluding yourself will keep you bound by those things that you feel like are your secret self, you know? So through Project Open Box, what it was is people would send me questions and I would answer them based on my life. So just kind of giving people a little... me too, you know, a little glimpse into the fact that you're not the only one going through that, you know. We all have our stories and our journeys, and one thing that people do forget is that your story and your journey is not just your own. You're living and experiencing these things to show and share with other people. I've been through some crazy things, and I would be like, dang, God, why am I going through this? Like, why is this my experience right now, yo? Like, what the heck, you know? And then later on, maybe 2 years later, I meet somebody and they're having a conversation and they're going through exactly what I went through, and now I have the knowledge and wisdom to be able to share with them, hey, yo, this is how I got through that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That transparency and that openness is how I was able to get through being manically depressed. You know what I mean? And that is something that I wanted to be able to share. So that's where Project Open Box came from. And I don't ever want to hear about another one of the people that are close to me that I just feel like I wasn't paying enough attention to, or I wasn't connected enough with, you know what I mean? Doing something like, you know, taking their life or harming themselves because of the fact they couldn't handle what their life situation, and they didn't have anybody to talk to. So I feel like that being open and giving a platform to truth is what helps heal.
And you're right, because I remember, like, when we talked about this earlier, T, when we were talking about how basically in the Black community, especially, like, in the Christian Black community, it's always this whole perspective of keeping up a front, or kind of like a show, in a sense, that we have it all together and our business is our business and we've got to keep this in the home and don't be telling my business out to other people, and you got to suck it up and take it mentality. And I think that that has been very detrimental to our society. I think that, you know, when it comes to being the strong Black woman or the strong Black man, like, that whole, you know, front is more detrimental than anything. And it really causes us to systematically and generationally create and, you know, can keep on moving forward with these generational curses that have been really hurting our families and hurting our communities since, like, the advent of slavery, you know, and colonialism.
Seriously, I mean, I feel as if, like, we're a lot of people are so trapped in their image that they can't be themselves. Like, it's terrifying, because you could be like, I hate to do this, but Kanye, so trapped in his image, and he's the one that said, I don't care what anybody thinks, but you're so trapped in trying to fit this I don't care what anybody thinks mentality, but you're forgetting who you are.
Wow.
You know, I was in love with Kanye West back in the day. You know, when College Dropout came out, he was raw. He was real. That was legit the guy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And after that, I don't know what has happened. I still like some of his songs, you know, no shade. But I just, you just notice the rapid decline in him, the more famous he became, the more he lost himself.
And I feel like we oftentimes lose ourselves to a whole bunch of, like, going back to my previous episodes, like, with corporate plantations and with Black KKK in Hollywood. Like, we end up losing ourselves to sustain, like to try to attain this kind of wealth or persona that, hey, we've got money and we've got prestige. And it's usually at what cost, though? You know, you always have to question, like, at what cost did you receive those, that money, that fame? You know, are you truly living up to the expectations, or are you only shucking and jiving and doing the dance like this is America in order to have those items? And I feel like as a society, as a Black community, we need to hold ourselves accountable to one another and not just focus on individuals who have money, especially in the church. Like, if you have money, like, you're good. Like, you're good as gold. You know, people look up to you. They think you're blessed. They want to try to be you. People, like, I've been to churches, so many different churches. And it seems like the more of the white churches, they have, like, people who can come in and, like, they don't have to come in a Mercedes. They don't have to come in their Sundays dressed best. They can come in as they are with, like, jeans and a t-shirt. But if you go to a Black church, it's like, oh yeah, we got to come out, we got to wear our best, we got to wear our Chanel, we got to rock the best purses and Michael Kors, we got to come out with our shoes looking nice and all this looking perfect and dressing and coming in the nicest, cleanest cars.
So true.
I'm like, I feel like the way that we placate is the way that we try to utilize that same standard towards when it comes to mental health. Like, if I don't say anything, I don't see anything, I don't hear anything, then everything's fine. And it is that type of mentality of that in denial that really forces a lot of individuals to feel like they're trapped. They don't have anywhere to go. They can't talk to anyone because they're afraid that someone's gonna see them as weak, or they're gonna be seen as like, oh, you're crazy. And this whole fear of being Black and crazy, and the stereotype of being Black and crazy, which in my opinion definitely comes through the advent of colonialism, of, oh, you're crazy, and the meaning of crazy during slavery, which is something I think as like an academic person and even future scholars, we have to really dive into. Because like I said in many other episodes, I feel like the first sociopaths were colonialists. I'm just kidding. The first serial killers stem from colonialists. And I think, in my opinion, it's a generational curse, because individuals, I can only imagine the psychological destruction that it has on the empathetic ability to feel and connect with another human being, regardless of color. It does something to someone to see, like having little children see at like picnics, a hanging body. It's just repulsive, disgusting, and it makes me question what that psychologically does to other younger generations to come that watch that are white. So I always talked about stuff like this in school, and all the teachers would look at me like, shut the fuck up.
Right.
And they were like, you're getting too deep. And I'm like, nah, if we're always looking at perspectives
that... deep, though. That's the thing. It's that deep, and people don't go deep enough. Like, they, oh yeah, slavery, yep, mm-hmm. We're just gonna keep this on the surface because, yeah, for 300 years or whatever, however long, you know, we were just, we were just farmers. Yeah, sometimes we got whoopings, but it wasn't that bad.
Yeah. And it's like that whole perspective, yep, of placating and fronting and like, oh, like kind of laissez-faire, like almost like, oh, it wasn't that bad. And then Black people have, like, in the Black community, I don't want to say all Black people because I don't want to generalize, but mainly my experiences of being in the Black community, I should say, I've have experiences that people don't want to discuss, experiences of like having, you know, being molested or sexually abused, or even when it comes to issues pertaining to, you know, divorce, or your husband's cheating on you, or domestic violence. And these are the things that we really need to focus on. And this is why I really, really love your work and your poetry, because you dive into the darkest parts of society on a national level, from American perspective, a Black woman living in America, and also a Black woman seeing things from an international perspective as well. So let's get into your next poem.
Let me add something on to what you just said, though.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who says and who thinks in their mind that slavery wasn't that bad, take and look at the fact that this thing that wasn't that bad still perpetuates itself today. And tell me, how terrible does something have to be in order for it to last hundreds of years? That's your truth.
That ripple effect, that domino effect, it's still, you're right, it's still seen and evident today.
No, it's all communities, white, black, Hispanic, no matter which way you look at it, in all communities, in the way that African-Americans parent, in the way that we love each other, in the way that the men don't know how to love on each other and know how to be affectionate because they weren't allowed to, and because that was looked at as if it was going to be a weakness, the way that we don't know how to understand the difference between strength and vulnerability. Mm-hmm. All of these things have to do with our lineage and our ancestry and how we were ripped away from our culture.
Exactly. I think it's the patriarchy from like Eurocentric perspectives that happened, the advent of colonialism. So we're looking at like, I want to say the early 1800s, even if you want to go back to the 1750s, when you're looking at Eurocentric perspectives, like Spanish, Portuguese, English, or England, I should say, France, Ukraine, Russia, when you're looking more at those perspectives of how women were treated and seen and used and seen as property in a sense, and how men had to have this certain perspective and persona in the public sphere and private sphere, and their inability to connect with women because they're seen as property, that kind of perspective definitely takes precedence in today, and it's still something that we see today because the colonizing perspective not only colonized like locations and countries and carved them out, we not only did that, we carved out bodies, we carved out minds, and it's something that we have to free ourselves from. In order for us to free ourselves, we have to be thinkers, and it is important for us to definitely support the art, support artists like Dame Soletic, and also allow yourself to be intimate with yourself and also to feel, think, and also reflect. Let's get into the next poem.
Give you a little tidbit from Lyric Painter Polaroids Volume 2. It's called Relationships and Situationships. Cop that. It'll be available at the end of the month.
Woo-woo!
So, you should get both, because, they kind of go hand in hand. It's a good read, I'm telling you, if I could say so myself. But anyway, here it is. This kind of segues into what we were just talking about. So, here we go. It's called Escaping Mirrors. I know what it's like to look at her in the mirror. For the truth to loom so heavily that you want to escape the next unpromised breath. For the truth of your eyes to be ignored because your teeth are showing. Smile. So no one asks because reality is uncomfortable to most. They would rather float. Float on religion. Float on falsified truth. Flat through life on borrowed smiles and hollowed eyes. Weightless. Lifeless. Purposeless floating. Attempting to not be found out, discovered, privately, they bleed. Cry. Concealed truth wrapped around prayer meetings, nice clothes, and the right conversation. Robotic motions of self-loathing affliction, but the conversation is uncomfortable, so we dress it up and accentuate our eyebrows, line our eyes with kohl and mascara, put on lashes, foundate our faces, highlight our chins, cheekbones, foreheads, brow bones, add light, praying that your inner death behaves itself today, because you can't mess up this makeup. These tears have no place. On this face, sunken here, prisoner, captive to self, a self you almost want to escape today, because yesterday you actually tried, silently hoping there wouldn't be a tomorrow, but it came. So you're here, showing what you wish was your own funeral. Just so someone, anyone, would bring you flowers and a kind word. A somber silence attached to the listening ears. A kind word with open eyes and actually see you. Just to know someone cares, that you're suffocating, praying. Then at least you wouldn't have to do it alone. You're not alone. Because I know what it's like. For the clouds to roll in and cover your sun.
for the darkness inside to be something that you can't outrun, for the silence to be so loud and uninvited, for the pain to be consistent, such a constant reminder of life's ever presence. My darkness had whispers and terrifying figures, sounds and stories that I wasn't sure who was telling. There was a depth to it that I couldn't wrap my mind around. No one spoke of this pit I stood chained to. No one knew. No one spoke about being terrified of nothing more than me. I didn't trust me. Tight lips I kept because it was uncomfortable to delve into spaces that I privately known. But I'm telling you that I know, and that you matter. I am willing to be uncomfortable with you simply because you are worth saving. I love you. If we face it, eventually it fades. I stood being so loud. It won't rain all the time. The voices won't get louder than your thoughts. Your eyes will have life, but it's imperative that you choose to actually fight because you're worth your next breath.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Woo! Yay! Oh my God, let me tell you. My heart, my mind was on a journey, y'all. You gotta, I'm telling you, I'm ready for volume 2. Lyric Painted Polaroids. I'm ready. I am ready. Oh my gosh. So when can we get this book? Because I'm like, ooh, I'm salivating.
So I was going to do pre-sales. You guys can get it for pre-sale the first 2 weeks of September. And you can get it for $12. After that, it's going to go up to $20. So if you guys want to get it on Amazon, you can get it off of Amazon. You can also get it on BarnesandNoble.com. So, yeah. And if you want a signed copy, you would have to order directly from me. You can get that either if you want to hit me up on my Instagram, the same Soletic, because I do Cash App. It's just easier. you can email me, whatever it is that you want to do. Like, we can make it work, make it happen.
Whoop, whoop. Oh my gosh, let's talk about it because I am excited. My goodness, yes, let's talk about transparency. So tell me the heart of the poem that you just read. And before, before we get into it, Dame Soletic, like my thing is, if you guys don't know, this poetry, like, first of all, volume one, painted, like, you know, Lyric Painted Polaroids, volume one, One Soul's Digest, that poetry book was amazing. Like, it literally didn't just talk about one type of perspective, like, of being heart, like, you're having your heart broken by a man, or, like, it opened your mind to so many different perspectives. It had so many like different genres and themes and topics pertaining to women's issues. It had like genocide in there. It had perspectives of like women wanting a relationship with their fathers. I mean, it just dove into so many different perspectives that it kind of left you like, dang, like, it's not just one type of like poetry book where it's just only talking about one type of genre. It really opened up your mind and like your heart to so many different perspectives and issues plaguing women of color in general. So it was just beautiful. But yeah, going back to Lyric Painted Polaroids volume 2 with this specific poem that you just read, can you please tell us the name of the poem again? And like where did you write that poem from? Like, what part of your heart did you pull that from?
Well, that poem, first off, I'm sorry, it's called Escaping Mirror. and it would be remiss of me not to say, like, I always, whenever I write a poem about suicide or depression, I always say, like, if you guys ever need help, if you're ever experiencing anything where you feel like you just no longer want to live or you just don't see the purpose in it, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is available for you 24 hours a day. It's 1-800-273-8255. Once again, the number is 1-800-273-8255.
Or you can email me if you just want to talk. You need an ear. And shoot, you can even text me. It's 760-909-7433. Anyway.
Hey, she shot the digits.
We all need somebody. Always need somebody.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That poem came from... I was actually talking about my experience with postpartum depression. I remember, like, to this day, like, I was so depressed. I was so miserable. And I was in such a dark space. And nobody saw it.
Wow.
Nobody could see the torture. Like, I don't know if anybody's ever experienced being in a room full of people and feeling like you're alone and having this heaviness on you that is so thick that you're struggling to breathe. Like, I was in such a dark space. It was like I was hearing voices. I was in a space where I really didn't want to live. There was no, like, thrive within me. Like, I wasn't interested in it. But at the same time, because I've had experience with other people, like, committing suicide around me, I never wanted to displace that pain on my family. And that was the only reason that I decided to try and push forward. You know what I mean? Like, it's the reality that that was the only reason for me was crazy.
Wow.
Like, life's not enough. And it's not like I hadn't just had a baby. You know, I had just had a baby. I was like, that's something that you're supposed to be excited about, you know? I had other stuff going on around me, like, the things that I was supposed to be excited about, but I just had no joy whatsoever. And I remember I would just be like, you know, I would go to church and, you know, do all this stuff, just like, Lord, please let somebody just see me. So I need help. I don't even know what to say. I don't know how to talk about this. I don't know if this is okay. I don't know if this is normal. I just need someone, anybody to see me and to take a minute to stop smiling their pretty little smile and really just say, hey, are you really okay? And it never happened.
Wow.
And it never happened. And in those moments, I realized, like, after I got past it, it was like, I never want to be in a space where I'm so caught up and so wrapped up in my own life and my pretty clothes and my made-up face that I can't see real people. Because real people hurt.
Mm.
Real people have things that they're hiding, things that they're experiencing that they don't know how to deal with. Real people have trauma. You know what I mean? Like, you could be pretty and take the best Instagram pictures and travel your butt off, but at the end of the day, your real life does not start until you're alone and the doors are closed and they're silent. That's who you are.
Woo! Let me say, Dame Soletic is not only a poet, she's a preacher. Like, I'm about to be amen up in here. Like, give me my tambourine. I'm about to be making hymns. Like, I'm for real. Like, I agree completely. And it really shows you, like, the detriment that this whole perspective of, like, we have to, you know, put on a show and pretend like everything is okay because we want to put on this whole persona that we're good. And it hurts individuals who are not good. And I feel like it's an unhealthy way of pushing forward that we as a Black community have had to utilize since slavery. Like, okay, this is what it is. And we just got to... And I feel like this mentality, like, kind of came from being in the South. Remember when they had this whole perspective that the Northerners used to come down to the South to see, like, hey, are the atrocities of the cotton gin and Black bodies being placed in cotton gins and Black bodies being hung and, you know, genitals being, you know, carved out of Black men's bodies. Is this really what's going on? Is like basically sociopathic and just horrible individuals who are white slave owners, are they really doing this to these slaves? And the whole perspective of like the white master telling the slaves, like, you gotta pretend like everything's okay, so when they come down you gotta make sure you tell them that you love it here and everything's good, because they were afraid that slavery was gonna stop because of the conditions that were going on. And I think that's the type of mentality that
we as a Black community still utilize to this day. And it's very detrimental to our mental health and our spiritual health. And it kind of creates like your own type of hell in a sense, because you feel like you can't reach out.
Absolutely. Because in essence, it gives power to the perpetrator and buries the victim.
Woo! And that's...
I allow for health to thrive. You cannot heal from or get past things that you continually experience because you cannot tell your truth.
Exactly.
It's not real. You can't.
And you know what's even deeper is I remember my father told me, he was like, you know what? Sometimes you just got to take it. You got to be just like back in the slavery days. And this is exactly what he said, quote unquote, back in the slavery days, you had to just be quiet and just take it. And that's just the type of perspective in my household, what you have to do. And it was that which caused me to kind of revolt and do a lot of things that I regret to this day, because I wanted to rebel. I was upset. I felt like I wasn't being heard. I wasn't being cared about. Nobody cared about my opinion, me, my existence. I felt like, just like you said when we had our conversation earlier off the air, when we feel like we're being out of sight, out of mind. Like, you're here, be thankful you're here, and just be quiet and do what you got to do. Like, sit down and be humble type of perspective in the worst way. And so I feel like it's that perspective. I also feel like for us, whenever we go through traumatic experiences in the Black community, as much as I love clinging to Jesus and God and Christianity, in my perspective, we only throw the Bible out and is like, give it to Jesus. But no one understands like what that means, nor does anyone have the capacity to help somebody go through their trauma by just telling them a sentence.
No, that's not, and I hate sugarcoating things. Like, you can't take someone who has been bludgeoned, brutally raped, and had their entire sense of self removed in a simple 15-minute act and say, give it to Jesus. That's not real. Like, I believe in God, I believe in Jesus, you know, but at the same time, I also believe in healing and health. And God gave us mouths, and he gave us ears, and we're supposed to listen twice as much as we speak. And if someone is hurting, give it to Jesus is not going to help them. That's what you're really saying is, I don't really want to deal with your pain because I have my own, and I don't know how to deal with my own, so let me walk away from yours.
It just
perpetuates the cycle of toxicity. You can't tell people to just bury it, be okay with it. Just let it marinate. You're gonna be fine, you know. Oh, you're bleeding profusely. It's okay. We're gonna wrap it up, and you know what? In 3 to 5 days, you're gonna be good. That's not real life. It's not real life. Like, I grew up trying to mask how I felt because I didn't know how to deal with emotion other than anger.
Wow.
So, me not knowing how to deal with emotion other than anger, when you have hurt and pain and traumatic experiences and all you can do is feel angry about them because you can't even come up with another emotion to speak of them, it doesn't help you heal. You can't even learn how to express yourself. And that's where my poetry came from. So, I feel like a lot of people need to really delve within themselves and actually figure out what works for them. Journaling, poetry, talking, you know, tell your truth however you need to tell it so that it's out, and then reread it to yourself. That reread, Lord Jesus, let me tell you, it does something. It hits home. It's like, wow. Like, I did this little project with a friend of mine a couple weeks ago, and he was really upset with me. And I was like, you can't even express to me how mad you are or what you're even mad about. How about you write it down and then read it? And then that way you'll be able to tell me. He said the things that came out when he was writing, he was like, there were emotions that he didn't even know he felt. He had to stop writing because he wasn't ready to embrace his truth.
Woo!
because of the fact he'd been burying so many things. And I feel like a lot of us, like, we're like blocked pipes, and everything is flowing backwards because we won't deal with the one thing that got buried in there against our will. You know what I mean? Like, our childhoods and stuff really do affect what kind of adults we become. It's so funny, like, my therapist told me that I was an adult child because I didn't know how to deal with my emotions.
Wow.
And but that came from me not knowing or being exposed to dealing with my emotions as a kid. So when it became to being an adult, I didn't know how to have a voice. I didn't know how to speak up for myself. I had to figure out how to have a range of emotion and not just shoot for anger. I used to fight all the time. I used to do crazy stuff just because all I knew how to do was be mad.
Exactly.
But in reality, being disappointed, being hurt, these things are real. You know, there's other emotions.
And I feel like once we dive into, like, when I was a part of, like, speech and debate, I was a very hurt mm-hmm. person. And I always held truth to, like, growing up with the same ideologies that my parents were telling me, which is, like, shut up, take it, you know, bury it under the rug type of perspective and try to keep walking over it and live your life as if it doesn't exist. And you know what I'm saying? A pile of shit is not under the rug and you don't need to clean it, you know? You don't have to address
right.
the bad parts. And so when I joined Speech and Debate and when I was a part of, like, it's called the IE, which is, like, interpretation, and you would literally do, like, interpretations of, like, different people's, you know, writings. It could be poetry, but mainly it was actually, like, plays that you would be doing interpretations of, dramatic interpretations. And so I remember when I received an amazing script and playwright from The Lady Sings the Blues, Billie Holiday, and that evoked so many emotions out of me that I never dove deep into. And once I opened up that box in my heart, it was so rough because I was pulling emotions that I held suppressed ever since I was, like, I want to say 6 years old, when I first went through a situation where I was, you know, physically taken advantage of as a child. And it was so freeing. It was so painful. And of course, I was hitting gold in all my, like, all my poetry and all my dramatic interpretation pieces. But that was because I was showing real pain and where it came from. And it was raw. Okay. And it helped me kind of, like, deal with it, but because I didn't know how to, like, deal with it after Speech and Debate ended, I ended up in this big depression. And I had a lot of coaches tell me, like, if you need help, if you need to go down to, you know, the therapist's office on campus, I'll walk with you. Like, I feel like you need, you know, a little bit more help because of what you've been through. And I've shared my heart with some of my coaches, and some of my coaches I didn't really share too much because of that fear of not being seen as strong, right? And I was a leader in, on the team at the time. So for me, it's like when I dove into the character of Billie Holiday and I felt the blues, that is when I felt like I connected with my past pain. And when I really got a chance to see myself and not sweep it under the rug, or in my perspective, in my mind, I always felt like I was angry with God because I felt like he didn't care or love me enough to stop this from happening. And I also was angry with my parents because I felt like they didn't protect me. And then most importantly, I felt like, well, maybe I was born to be a sexual being. Maybe, you know, this is what I was supposed to be. Just like, you know, somebody walks over. I wasn't made to be cherished and loved and protected. And so I started believing in those things and I didn't have really a great self-esteem to pull from. And then once I had the chance to go through Speech and Debate and then develop my own self from being able to face the things that I didn't really like, the unpretty things about myself, just like you're saying, looking at yourself in the mirror, it really was the turning point in me as a person, as a human being. And I think me being transparent was something, even utilizing YouTube years later, going through, like, homelessness, and me utilizing my voice even for a Big Mouth Black Girl podcast. Like, a lot of people are not ready for transparency because they feel like it's scary. It's something that's out of their comfort zone, and they don't want to really look at themselves because they've always put on this mask and they're comfortable with their mask, you know?
Right.
So.
It's true. And a lot of us are taught to be comfortable with it and that it's okay to wear it.
I feel like we've been taught to paint our masks. I feel like we've been given masks by us being told as children, we need to be quiet, we need to not worry about this, give it to Jesus type perspective. We've been given a mask and we've been taught to paint it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like taking off the mask is the first part of healing, and then learning to love yourself for what you've hidden for so long is something that we also need to learn to embody as a Black community and as a culture. And that needs to stem from an internal love and an acceptance of what slavery did to us. I think we're afraid to really see that we were in servitude, because I hate the term servitude, like we were servants. You know what I'm saying? We were getting paid.
Right.
No. I hate that shit. In the history book, it says servitude. I was like, oh, that's a politically correct term. I always raised my hand and I said, that's a slave, right? I was that child.
Right, exactly.
Like, come on, let's not profile and stunt. Like, y'all enslaved. Y'all enslaved people.
Not lie here.
So, for me personally, I feel like this started during the whole perspective of slavery, right? And so I think we need to get out of that box, and we need to learn and accept that, hey, we were slaves, we were enslaved, we were treated as animals, but we need to cling to something like our creative ways, like our ability to do poetry, our ability to still rise above, our ability to still be present. A lot of different cultures back in the day have passed away from like famine and disease, but we are still here. We are still present for a reason. And we have to realize that there is a reason why Black individuals have been pressed and suppressed for so long, and why people are so afraid of Black individuals taking prominent positions and making real change. So that's just, you know, that's my perspective on that. And mainly, I just want to say, I really appreciate all of your work, all of your transparency. I cannot wait to work with you on different projects. I can't wait to see your new book, Lyric Painted Polaroids, Volume 2, y'all. I'm so excited. Relationships and situationships. Let's go. And mainly, I want us as upper generation, once you get out of the allegory of the cave, once you get out into reality and you see what the world is about and you see what we can be, it's hard for a lot of people to change their patterning ways, their ways in which they've created a comfortable lifestyle, because being fake and being in denial is more comfortable than dealing with the truth. But we've got to stand firm and we've got to be able to be that light, right?
That's true.
So I thank you so much for your work, Dame Soletic. Thank you so much for being on Big Mouth Black Girl.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh my God.
Big Mouth Black Girl podcast. I feel like whenever I connect with women like you, it really makes me happy. It makes me feel like, man, I'm doing the right thing, because it's crazy. Like, when people think you're crazy for telling your truth or making you say, hey, I don't feel a certain way, I feel like I'm not strong because of my external environment, and maybe because you're triggering and causing this, like, for people to say, hey, you're crazy, or hey, like, you're doing something wrong, when in your heart and in your soul, you know you're doing something right. To have people say, like, you're doing it right, and I can just give you back that same feedback, like, you're doing the right thing. We got to build each other up, right?
I appreciate that. And you're so right. We do. There should be way more building and less sharing. Like, there's a whole lot of other things in society that are tearing us down. We don't need to be doing it to each other.
Exactly. And so let's definitely support Dame Soletic. Again, her Lyric Painted Polaroids Volume 1 and Volume 2 will be available. Volume 1 is currently available right now, but Volume 2 will be available the second week of September. So definitely look for that. Check her out on Instagram. Check her out on Facebook. Check her out on Twitter. Check her out. Let's support our Black women. Let's not talk about it. Let's be about it. Let's support our Black women, because not only do we have a voice, do we have a heart, and we have a passion, but we definitely have something to say. So don't just listen to us, feel us. Anyway, it was a pleasure, and you guys have a great one, and I hope you guys stay blessed. You can also reach out to me on Big Mouth Black Girl Podcast on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. You can catch me on Count Your Blessings K, K-A-Y. And without further ado,
I'm Dame Poetic, y'all. Y'all can catch me, find me Dame Poetic on Instagram, or T Dame Poetic Luther on Facebook. Yeah. If you guys need those books, pre-sale, $12. After the second week of September, they will be $20. So get in on the 12 and get your signed copy today.
I'm getting mine. So, I mean, y'all got to get yours too. But you guys have a good one, and bye.
After.